If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is On Earth Assignment. So, none of us are here by mistake. We are all here because we chose to be here. We, the Star-Seeded, Celestial, and the Ceres, are here on Earth Assignment. So, last week, I spoke about Venus and how I, a former Venusian, came to be here, now on Earth. I spoke about, I'm going to be doing a lot of clearing of expression tonight, so just bear with me clearing my throat. That's for all of you who are going to be transmitters and communicators, and we're activating as we do these seminars each week. These are for the starseed to get you online with your divine purpose for being here and opening your communication levels and chakras so that you can speak what you're given to speak. By God, not by us, by God. So anyway, last week I went into the different overlays of consciousness integration that I've undergone and a bit of my personal what it was like for me to wake up here on this bizarre planet. Interesting, but bizarre. And on the seven very distinct lifetimes that I've lived while in the same body. So tonight I will share how I was guided to my first Ashtar Command mentor and made aware of my mission. And when I say I, please bear in mind that the I that I was then is not the same I that I am today. The soul aspect that first was activated was of a lovely and sweet soul, also a Venusian from the Ashtar Command, whose name was Denise. And interestingly enough, I actually encountered her some years back, and she was still into horses and the circus and dancing and dramatic arts, which I thought was extremely interesting. So, where do I want to start with this? First, let me speak a little bit about our purpose in coming to Earth. And this applies no matter where we've come from, most recently, within this vast cosmos. We are all spirit beings made of, by, and from one creator spirit, one source. Our spirit, or Atma if you prefer, is one with God and identical to God. So when I use the term self-realization, the self that I'm referring to is that God spirit, that God spark. I like to call it the God extension because we didn't leave God like a spark would, but we did extend the divine consciousness into individualized soul aspects that we call our individuality, each of which is quite unique. And this is because of the variety of experiences we passed through as we came through the dimensions and the worlds and the universes to inhabit this particular envelope that we call ourselves today. So we were created by the one divine source, which in truth is way beyond any definition of name or form or gender or religious connotation. That one creator source is totally untouchable by our human, concepts. We can't even speak of it other than to say God is that which is, a tat, T-A-T, and T-A-T-H, as it's spoken of in the Vedic scriptures, or the I am that I am. So every single one of us is part of God. We are eternal in existence and completely, purely divine. That's unchangeable. Now, as we extend by the will of the Creator into the MEST, M-E-S-T worlds, which mean matter, energy, space, and time, we are here to have every kind of experience possible. I like the definition that John Roger has given of God. God is the soul that has had all experiences. And I've added a little tag onto that. Has had all experiences, yet remains above and beyond all experiencing. So, in a way we could say that each one of us as soul is God pretending to be you and me and Harry and Jane and Sally and Tom. Yes, everyone is a divine incarnation with a mission to gain experiences through all of these many human forms. So those of us from other worlds may have indeed mastered many things on our respective world planets. But here, Earth is called a school of difficult endeavor. And here we need to learn how to move unaffected and unoffended by negativity, polarized states of consciousness, and duality. How to live unaffected and unoffended by duality, polarized states of consciousness, and negativity. Well, so our work is cut out for us, isn't it? I know on Venus we have nothing but love. Everyone lives in divine love and in a very, very golden age state. There's peace and love and harmony, and people are godlike and godly. And there's no money, no war, no crime, no conflict. Some of you, I can hear you say, boring. no, we have our own challenges, but they're not of the polarized states of consciousness, let's put it that way. But we get down here, and goodness gracious, people are so unloving and rude, negative, and confrontative. It's quite a different bag. So we are designed to live our life and to learn through the experiences of that life. On Earth, another name for Earth and the graduates of Earth is that we become the adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. What does that mean? It means we can walk in divine neutrality in the higher consciousness between the polarized states that most people tend to gravitate to and become attached to one or the other. And it's interesting, you can become just as entrapped by being polarized in a positive sense as you can becoming polarized in a negative sense. I'll tell you in a nutshell, the easiest way to walk through this earth and not get snagged is to have a good sense of humor. When you take yourself lightly and learn to dance with life, not get so hunkered down in your opinions and your belief systems and your polarized preferences, and you just kind of let life be easy, around you. Let it be what it's going to be. Stick to your own particular dance, your own melody, your own drum beat. Do what you need to do. And let other people do the same. You don't have to jump into their pool of persuasion and set yourself against others in a different pool of persuasion. Because the minute you do that, you're trapped. Whatever you try to avoid, you are stuck to. That's not a pleasant thing to think of, but it's so very true that aversion is as strong an energy of attraction as rampant desire for the same thing. So either way, you're stuck. So divine neutrality allows you to discern, adjudicate, in other words, discern between the pairs of opposites and choose, like Buddha taught, that middle path, that middle way. And that way we can enjoy the scenery along the way without getting off and getting entangled in the, you know, the pit stops along the way. So life on Earth is like a pit stop in an infinite, ever-expanding, full of life, beautiful worlds within worlds within worlds, universes without end. Wow! And you're designed, and I'm designed, and we're designed to become conscious agencies of creative expansion. We are being trained to function as initially demigods. That would be a little god. And eventually to move into those states where we can actually create initially a planet, and then a solar system, and then a universe, and on and on and on. We have different functions within that, of course. Many, many different levels of expression and functionality within this dynamic. We're not all going to be a creator, demigod, so to speak, but we're all going to be involved in creative expression. Creativity is the very nature of the godlings that we are. We're made in the image and likeness of our creator, so, duh, we're creative. There's no way we cannot be creative. So, learning to be conscious in that creative expression is the task of our Earth assignment. And we learn here through many, many failures by on that road to our successes. So we have to become comfortable with the polarities of our learning, which is success and failure. One step forward, 10 steps back if necessary, or 10 steps forward and 1 step back. Whatever your process is, we need to learn to become accepting and allowing of whatever our particular learning dynamic is, and to bless it and love it all in all of its stages with great, great compassion. So initially, when a soul embodies on the Earth dimension, particularly those of us who are used to, like myself, flying through the air and going through solid objects and having a very free-flowing life, it's like being in a cement suit when you feel the physical body and everything hurts. Everything. It's like, I think we spend our first few weeks and months of our life screaming our heads off because it's so darn uncomfortable. Plus, we can't communicate with these humanoids that seem to love us but not understand a single thing we're trying to communicate. So it's very frustrating for most of us in our initial howdy-do's here on this planet. So the first task at hand really is to learn how to navigate and be in this physical body. And at first we fully identify with our physical body and our personal identity and have really no conscious control over our circumstances or even the events we encounter. Things are on a time sequencing here, which are also on a time lag. So if you come from realms that are not time-bound, like this Earth, that's frustrating. It causes many of us to be kind of impatient with the gradualness that's required to master anything in this dimension. So gradually as we progress in life after life, we become more and more conscious and on purpose and more self-determined in where and how we place our creative energy and focus. So today, most of you who are drawn to listen to these series of webcast seminars are well into your process of self-realization. You're beginning to awaken to the divinity that you are, and you're becoming more and more conscious in the co-partnering with Divine Source. So what is the purpose? We're all in training to become conscious, co-creative spirits, masters and adepts at work within the various worlds, dimensions, and universes. And that, beloveds, is ongoing. We don't have a final ending to that where we can say, well, that's it, no more growth. Uh-uh. It's eternally traveling consciousness. In other words, etc. So your life and your assignment is to cultivate and practice being more and more conscious and aware. We are designed to continually expand beyond our current knowledge, beyond our current levels of experience, and any confines of personal limitation. So our duty is always to strive to push the envelope, to go the next step, to climb the next mountain. And each generation, if you'll notice, seems to excel and exceed the previous generation. You know, in terms of physical strength, you see this in the Olympian athlete, just like each generation is more and more skilled and extraordinary because there's a certain collectivity with this. And once a particular milestone or a record is set, you watch, boy, the next time that record is pushed to a new high. So, in a sense, we are our own ancestors returning today as you and me. It's an interesting way to look at previous cultures and history as your own story, made up from your own previous lives, lived in every world, every star system, every continent, every planetary and universal culture, and within every historical period. Boy, if they told us that when we were in school, we'd have a lot more attention to our lessons, I think. So we can't really point back to any group of period, group of people or period of time, with a lot of judgment and criticism because that was us. And you'll notice every single person at any given point in their life, really and truly, is doing the best they know how, given their karma, their present level of understanding, and what they have available to work with within their particular dynamic. So give yourself a break and cut people some slack because we're all doing the best we know how, and if we knew how to do better, we would do better. So be patient with where you find yourself, and never forget, this is all just a gymnasium, the training of mastery and consciousness. It's a gymnasium. You don't have to stay here forever. You don't have to go through all of the exercise equipment. But find a particular set of muscles you need to work on and get in there and work on them. But realize you're gonna be walking out of the gym at some point and you have a bigger life. So don't get too tunnel visioned on how well you think you're doing because you don't have enough information to really see yourself clearly or to judge yourself. But having said that, everywhere you look, when you really awaken to who you are as spirit, you will see only yourself. There's really nothing else to see, both within and without, but yourself, capital S, that divine self. So, your one divine self, expressing as and through the many, will arrive at that place, will eventually see the one wherever you look. And actually, that is the real goal of all earthly experiences, is to see through the facade, through the appearance, through the situation, through that unusual presentation of a personality, to one divine spirit. That's the mystic vision that we're all here to cultivate. Now, when you can echo the words of Jesus, our elder brother, I and my Father are one. When you have seen me, you have seen the Father. Know that Jesus was speaking from God consciousness, called in yogic parlance, nirvikalpa samadhi. That's the non-qualified, unified vision. That's called Advaita, the highest philosophical positioning you can take in divine spiritual realization, which is to realize God alone is all that is, pure, non-dualistic monism. So that is the highest degree. Now, most of us, because we are living in the outer world, keep our consciousness just beneath that. Why? Because in nirvikalpa samadhi, when you go into that where you see and experience nothing, you simply go into the all that is, as the all that is, you can only hold a body, according to the yogis, for 21 days, and it falls off like a dried leaf. So obviously, if we want to stay in the world to fulfill our mission, we keep our consciousness in savikalpa samadhi. Savikalpa is where you're aware you're divine, and you're aware everyone else is divine, but you have the ability still to perceive a world and others in it and function within it. So we stay at that savikalpa samadhi stage. And when we cross from this dimension in our transitions, we will, of course, move into the Advaitic state if we have indeed attained it. So to arrive at that place, we eventually acquire the skill to dance lightly through our lives, not hunkering down in any rigid position, but allowing life and experiences and relationships and people and encounters to flow through us, unfettered and free. I like to take sometimes the imagery in my mind of being like, you know, diaphanous, it's not too elegant a fabric, but like cheesecloth, you know, that has the gauze-like effect. So things just pass through you just easily and lightly. And things will pass through you if you don't have any similar vibrations going to a snag. For example, if you're susceptible to anger, you're going to get snagged if somebody pushes your irritation button. See what I mean? But if you don't have anger as a constant vibratory pattern in your aura, you can be around angry people and there's nothing to affinitize that anger into your energy field. See what I'm saying? So that's important. So the objective is to remain the neutral, objective observer and at the same time participate fully in life. And we fulfill our human duties to the best of our ability and know that it is the process of that self mastery, when we become fully in charge of how we orchestrate the energies of our particular life. We're not our body, and yet we take care of our body because it is the home of the divine spirit, you and me, the not our mind. And yet we develop our mind so that it can be utilized as a focus point of concentration, which we can use as a tool to for deep penetrating inquiry and insight. We develop a rich repository of knowledge, increasing our ability to think and reason and discern and decide. And from that knowledge and repeated practice and experience, our knowledge ripens into wisdom. Our wisdom enables us to become more and more the observer, and at the same time, to exercise conscious self-direction. So this then is manifests as an ever-expanding horizon of mastery as more and more and more areas of our life are mastered. And this is important for me to say it, I think, more than one time, because I think it's a really good definition for mastery. An area is mastered when it is no longer a concern, problem, or disturbance on any level. I'll say that again. An area is mastered when it is no longer a concern, problem, or disturbance on any level. So the things that concern you, that are problematic, that disturb you, that tend to distract you from the love and peace and centered equanimity of a self-realized being, when these things, you notice them, that's the area you're to work with until it, you know, you can let it again pass through you without hooking into you. So now, as I promised you, I'm going to tell you a little bit of my story of how I found my first Ashtar Command mentor. First of all, the Ashtar Command sent my first mentor to find me. And the call was set forth into the ethers. I was, as I told you, married to a minister, very young. And the call was sent forth to that minister and to whoever was closely involved with him, because the command said that the person that my teacher was looking for was associated with that minister. So during that time, I started having a lot of sightings. Every time I would step out of my apartment, I was living in Las Vegas, Nevada at the time, a grouping of stars would shift their position and seem to trail my car wherever I drive. You know, it got so I would look up in the sky for them as soon as I'd walk out my door, and they would go, whoop, they'd come into formation. I'd get in my car, and they'd follow me. And if I stopped my car and had to get gas or something, they would circle overhead until I pulled out of the gas station, and then they would follow me again. And I would try to draw people's attention to them, and I'd think, why in the world aren't people, like, noticing this? There was one that was looked like a light bulb, and it was so huge, it was exactly like a white light bulb, and it would kind of float along the high-tension wires just by my car. And it shows you how consciousness orchestrates what you see, because no one, not that, you know, the area was that crowded. I was out in the desert. In those days, Las Vegas wasn't as populated as it is today. But still, you'd think the cars on the, you know, the street would at least notice, but they never seemed to. Also, I was feeling restless. You know how one does when you sense something is about to happen? And I was antsy. And I started having lots of light episodes. As I told you in my last show, I had already experienced 3 hours and 45 minutes of missing time earlier. And that was just during a time that I was having a bout of abysmal depression. And out of the depression. I had, you know, sat down to kind of review my life. And the next thing I knew, 3 hours and 45 minutes had passed. And I came back fully, fully awakened and activated. And I was ready. I wasn't fully certain what I was ready for, but I knew I was ready. And I had a complete, like, divine revelation of the sacredness and sanctity of life, and that God was indwelling me and all beings. So for light episodes, my young daughter had a picture of the Solomon's head of Jesus on the, you know, one of those on the wood plaques you can buy in any souvenir shop. Anyway, one of those was hanging over her crib. And when I went in one night to tuck her in, I looked up at the Jesus picture, and it was spinning. It was spinning. And, you know, just strange. And then I would see golden light outlining objects, like 2 or 3 inches around objects. Everything I looked at had like a glow to it, a golden light. And then when I'd gaze out the window into the horizon, I'd see little dark specks, which is like, as I gazed at them, they would become brilliant sparks of light. And, of course, I was seeing the vitality globules, or what is called prana. And you can see them, too, if you practice gazing in kind of a soft, diffused gaze into the horizon. First, it'll look like little dark spots, specks, and then it'll become little dancing, brilliant sparks. So you could try that. Quite fun to know that you're looking at etheric matter. And the worlds that we're moving into are etheric, physical, which means they're physical, but they're in one of the 4 higher subplanes of the physical dimension. So I had just borrowed and read a copy of the book, Autobiography of a Yogi, which so many of you tell me was your first spiritual book. And I had longed to have a guru. So I prayed to Babaji, the eternal guru that's mentioned, that's been living on Earth for 5,000 years. And I asked him to guide me to a living guru. Well, I was about to meet my first spiritual teacher. However, she would never call herself a guru, I'm sure. But she was a commander in the Ashtar Command. And so, one day I walked into this weird little store, and it was a store that many people would peek into so repetitiously, but not have the courage to go inside, because it was strange. We're talking 1960. So, it's like, early 60s. It was like weird. We had just in America heard about Maharishi through the Beatles, and he had just begun to introduce the Western world to meditation. So that was considered weird. So you can imagine how weird this little store was. And it had a window that had all sorts of oddities, one of which was a spaceship with a statue of Jesus standing by it and a big sign that said, Jesus came to Earth in a spaceship. He was from Venus. So you can imagine how strange that store was, but it attracted me for reasons which we will soon see. I walked in to buy the book, Autobiography of a Yogi, and they didn't have it, but I had a bunch of other books that the girl there had suggested that I read. And I was very careful to say, I want something that will start me at the beginning. You know, I'm just beginning in this, and I want the beginning books. So she had laid out this whole bunch of books. So I went to pay for the books, and up behind the counter, this fiery-eyed, black-haired woman pops up like Jack in the Box and says, well, what took you so long? What an opening line. Well, what took you so long? The boys upstairs said you were coming months ago. You're from the Ashtar Command. You're from Venus. We've had a past life together, and we're supposed to work together in this lifetime. Well, that rocked me back on my heels, I can guarantee you. But the minute she said, asked her command, I felt hot and cold and goosebumpy and excited and like I was going to cry all at the same time. I'm sure some of you listening know exactly what I'm talking about, because you've probably had experiences like that too, where you're pierced to the very core with the realization of something, but you haven't a clue what it is. So I knew instantly that everything she said was true. It made everything in my life that I've been experiencing since I was a little girl suddenly leap into significance and fall into place. So she said, come, follow me. And she took me in the back of the store. And this store was dedicated to health, physically, mentally, emotionally, culturally, esoterically, and every other level that you would need to integrate to be a whole and functioning person. It was quite an amazing store. Anyway, in the back of the store, they had health food products, and they had massage recliner chairs. And she sat me down in one of the chairs, and she said, now I'm going to ask you three questions, and I want you to give me the first answer that comes out of your mind. And I have told this story before, so I'm going to be brief. Excuse me. She said, what was that star that brought Jesus? Excuse me. What was that star that shone over the birthplace of Jesus in Bethlehem? What was that star? And I said, well, this sounds kind of weird, but I believe the star was a spaceship. And she said, correct. She said, who were the three wise men? There were actually more than three, but who were the wise men that came to visit Jesus? And I said, well, they were beings from that spaceship that came to make sure that he got into his body okay. She said, correct. And, and I think the very first question she asked, she said, was the birth of Jesus a virgin birth? And I said, yes, because he was conceived by rays of light, not through sex. Now, this is something I have known since I was a little child, that true conception takes place not through the animal form of mating, like we do still on Earth because of the evolution of this physical form from the animal kingdom, but we actually land in meditation, and the conjoining of the rays of light spark conception. And, of course, later on, many years later, I found out from Sai Baba that that's how avatars are born. They're born through mantra, the word of God, and through divine sparked conception, or immaculate conception, as it's called, religiously speaking. It's called pravesha in Sanskrit. Pravasa is normal conception. Pravesha is divine conception, mind to mind or soul to soul. So I passed on all three questions, and mind you, I had no knowledge why I answered that way. It was like she said to give the first answer that came into my mind, and so my inner knower spoke. And I often ask people to speak from their knowing. That was a good example of me speaking from my knowing, because nothing I had ever read. So my teacher told me that I was to go back home and not to come to the store for an entire week. And when I came back, I had to tell her where we had a past life and the relationship. And as I've said before, that was the longest week I ever spent in my life, because that's all I could think about. And it led to me having an experience where I was in the palace of Nefertiti Akhenaten, and I recognized that she had been like I thought maybe my mother, because she was an older person, I was a younger girl, And when I came back and told her that, she said that she had been my elder sister. And yes, we had been the daughters of Nefertiti Thiknaughton, she the elder and I the fourthborn. So thus began my official study with the Station of Cosmic Light. And it was quite amazing. The Ashtar Command had drafted out a 3-year course of study that involved 3 levels and a mystery school that we created. We actually purchased a house and refurbished it within and without as a mystery school, where each room was devoted to one of the levels of the training. And we even had our stories written all around the school, around the, molding on the ceiling in hieroglyphics. One of the girls had trained to be able to write in hieroglyphics, and she'd written her whole stories of how we came in to the Station of Cosmic Light. And there were 10 of us. There was 8 women and 2 men. Now, the Ashtar Command had assigned my teacher the task of training 10 teachers who would be ambassadors for the Ashtar Command. And of those 10, I think I'm the only one that actually became a teacher. I don't know what happened to the others, but I did. I definitely became a teacher and have been working with and for the Ashtar Command ever since. But the course of study was quite amazing. It covered physical health, mental cybernetics, thought forms and their manifestations, theosophy, the Alice Bailey books, ancient cultures, the Bible, ancient civilizations, Lemuria. We read all of the books by James Churchward, I think his name was, that wrote all of the series of the Mu and Lemuria. We read Donnelly's book on Atlantis. We read all about Egypt and Israel and Greece and the Andes and the Skull of the Seven Rays and the Andes at Lake Titicaca, E.T. civilizations, colonizations, extraterrestrial contactees. And remember, this was the time when nobody knew anything about grays or these negative aliens that people talk about today. All of the contacts had been with humans, humanoid, beautiful beings from Venus and Mars and Saturn and Neptune and what's the other one? Well, anyway, they were all positive beings. None of them, not one of them, were negative. And these were contactees who actually had been taken aboard a landed ship and taken very often to other planets, either for a visit or a stay of a month or two. And I was so privileged in those days to meet many of these people because the Ashtar Command would send them into our little store. And in the store, we were trained to work with people as teachers. We would have our students that would come in and study with us. And we would have this store, and it was right on the corner of the Strip. I forget the name of the Las Vegas Strip now. It's Las Vegas Boulevard, I forget what. But it was right at the corner of Fremont Street and the Strip. It's not there anymore because I looked when I was recently in Las Vegas. But that was where the store was, where I received my training for 3 years with my first Ashtar Command teacher. Now, it was interesting because she was given a 10-year mission. Oh, let me just digress for a moment. In the store, we dressed in colors that represented each day of the week and a different spiritual tradition. We had, we had Egyptian, Tibetan, Mayan, Christian, Grecian, Native American, and Indian cultures that we represented. We wore big, high-necked, golden brocade capes, We didn't wear anything with leather. We were pure vegetarians. We didn't take any kind of like stimulants. I had to give up my beloved coffee. We were on a very strict path. We weren't allowed to fraternize with each other after work. We could only, we weren't allowed to date or have any kind of extracurricular life. We completely were dedicated to our spiritual practice and our studies. We couldn't just read at random. We had specific lessons, specific times to study them, and then we had specific rest periods when we weren't allowed to read anything. And the Ashtar Command was in complete charge of this school, so we were taught directly by the command, which is pretty amazing when you stop to think about it. And we had a chapel in our store that represented all the world faiths, and each was honored. And we had all kinds of metaphysical books and spiritual books. And we had museum replicas from all the different both in jewelry and statuary that represented the different cultures. It was wonderful, really, really, truly was. And we did a lot of field trips where we would go out and contact the extraterrestrials that would appear and in their ships. And we visited a marvelous place in Las Vegas, which if you're near there, you should really go see it, called the Valley of Fire. And it was said that there had been a great thermonuclear war at one time on the Earth between the extraterrestrials during the time of Atlantis. And it actually had created the molded rock formations that you see in the Valley of Fire, which is this blood-red rock that just crops out of the middle of the desert. And many of the formations really resembled spaceships that looked like they were somehow melted into the rock. And other formations, you can see all sorts of interesting things out there. But anyway, that's what we were told. So my teacher, after 10 years, he'd been given a 10-year mission to train 10 teachers, and 10 days after her mission was completed, on a day that added up to a 10, she passed away in my arms. And I was devastated. I thought that was the end of my existence when she died. We had so many plans of things we were going to do, one of which was to go to India to find the Christ incarnation. She felt sure that Christ had taken embodiment in India. And I think now, actually, she was sensing the birth of Sai Baba and his presence in India. And Joan Roger told me many years later that she had reincarnated as one of Sai Baba's college students. So she's in a male body, and presumably she is one of his graduates from his school, which I thought was pretty interesting because I had always regretted that she didn't live to see Sai Baba. So I didn't have to worry about that because she pulled right into that incarnation. Anyway, after she passed away, there was quite a power kerfuffle, as often happens, and one of the people took it upon, I'm going to say they, so you can't tell the gender, they took it upon themselves to begin to take charge of the group. And the first thing they said is that you must make a pledge to serve this group for eternity. And here's where your tests come in, okay? This is a test. These people who, I was very young, they were all much older than me, and they came on very, you know, forcefully. You must, you know, make this pledge to serve this group for eternity. And I said, no, I will make a pledge to serve no one for eternity but the Christ. I said, I'm pledged eternally to the Christ, but not to this group and not to any human being. They were very upset. So they left me alone for a while. And then another situation came up, and I was going to leave. I had decided that it was my time was to to my husband and I wanted to leave. So this time, another test came, and they threatened me. They said, if you leave, you will age rapidly, you'll lose all of your light, and you'll have great misfortune. Well, that's called witchcraft. That's manipulation, coercion, intimidation, threatening, and all of the above. In other words, that's an direct infliction of consciousness, which is a spiritual crime upon another person to try to coerce them into some action. But again, I remembered, and I said, Jesus said that he is the light of the world, not your store. Your store is not the light of the world. Your rituals and the things you do are not the light. Jesus is the light, and I will follow him. I'm not going to follow you, your group, or any human. I follow only the Lord. So I passed both of those tests and began my mission. First thing I did, I started studying for the ministry and became ordained. As I mentioned before, I was ordained under Colonel George Van Tassel's giant rock where he had his meditation chamber under that huge boulder. And my husband and I lived in Yucca Valley, where, interestingly enough, I was neighbors. First of all, I was the neighbor of Tiska Deska, also called White Star. Now, she is the woman that Tuella got her mission from when she first became the instrument for the Ashtar Command, the communicator for the command. She got it from Tiska Deska, called White Star. So she was just down the street. And then those of you who have seen the pictures of the Ashtar commanders, there's a whole series of them, they were drawn by a woman by the name of Saleya Winkler. And she lived just down the street from where we lived. And then, not far away, Gabriel Green lived. And he also was a major contactee of the Ashtar Command. And then, not too far away, Giant Rock and Landers, was George Van Tassel and his wife. Now, this was way before he had built the Integratron. This was when he and his wife ran a restaurant at their airport, Giant Rock Airport. And it was a little private plane airport. And they used to have what they called golden density meetings, where he would go into the golden density and receive clear dictation from the Ashtar Command. He wrote some marvelous books. I don't think you can even get them anymore. Very scientific and very, very profound. Now, one night, he and his wife were contacted by a tall Venusian extraterrestrial by the name of Solgonda. And they were camping out on that night. And Solgonda came and shook Van Tassel awake. Van Tassel was kicking his wife under the covers, trying to get her to wake up. They had put her, made her sleep. So no matter what he did, she wouldn't wake up. And Solgonda beckoned for George to follow him, and he took him to where his ship was parked on, the tarmac of the airport. Took him aboard ship, showed him the controls, showed him all the stuff, and then pulled out a diagram of what he was going to guide Van Tassel into creating, which was a time machine. It was a time machine, a rejuvenator, and one that could set back not only the time, but say, for example, you'd had an accident and broke your leg or something. They could actually put you in that machine and your leg, to the time before you had the accident, so that your body was restored into pre-accident condition. That was the technology that the Venusian Solgonda had given to Van Tassel. So from that he constructed the Integratron, which my husband John and I were on the board of directors of his. Trying to think what he called it. I think he called it the College of Universal Wisdom. And the Integratron was constructed, but left 5% short of completion because Solgonda by that time had realized that humanity would misuse the technology. And there's no point in giving technology to people who are living egocentric lives. You know, why prolong an egocentric life, indefinitely, which is what the machine could have done. Just shows you some of the technology that awaits humanity when we grow up a little bit more and are able to use these things properly. So anyway, after some time, my husband and I moved to Santa Barbara. George Van Tassel passed away. We were there, were summoned to his to the hospital when he had passed away by his wife. We took Van's car and his clothes home and his widow home. And while we were driving his car back to their home, we heard Van, that's what we call George Van Tassel, we heard Van say, "Hey, you guys, you got to come over here. This is fabulous. This is great. You got to see this stuff." And he was so happy to be out of his body and in spirit. So, anyway, he was all excited. He was back with the Ashtar Command and going on with his mission as we do. You know, this life here is, like I said, it's a pit stop, and it's always on to next. So we moved to Santa Barbara, where we met Frank Dorland, who was the first man, I think, that Anna Mitchell Hedges had entrusted with the skull, which at that point was called the Skull of Doom, the Crystal Skull. Because if you were negative, boy, all sorts of stuff came out of that crystal skull. And during the time he and his wife had it in their home, a black panther had come out of the skull and had just ripped the curtains and everything in his living room and the couches to shreds. So it took them a while to learn to cover it with velvet and not to leave it exposed so anybody could come in, because unless you were in a really high state of consciousness, the skull would manifest both polarities depending on who was with it. So that was interesting. Then I started working with Dr. Torkham Seradarian, who got me started teaching classes officially and in the outer world. And I've already told that story, so I won't go into that again. And I got involved studying in the Arcane School in New York City, where I underwent their course of esoteric science. And got involved with the Sai Baba movement, made my first trip to India, encountered my Venusian teacher, John Roger, got involved with his group, MSIA, and eventually we ended up living at Prana here in Los Angeles, which is now a beautiful peace labyrinth and garden, meditation garden, as well as a magnificent mansion that people can come and visit. It's called the Home of the Travelers. And then I began to teach at the Peace Theological Seminary and create classes for the ministerial training program and made many trips back and forth to India. So that catches you up a little bit on my mission, which basically is to teach and to write and to activate and decode and prepare people for this dimensional shift that we are currently making. So I tell that only because each of us, as I mentioned, I think I did a whole show on how each one of us has individuals that are staked out, as it were, that are, that you're designed and destined to encounter at different points of your life. And they point you in the direction of pure spiritual destiny, your particular, whatever it is that you're to do. So watch the people that come into your life and seem to serve as directive in some form. Sometimes it's just a subtle nuance. Sometimes they appear at times when your choice is very decisive. Sometimes they stay forever in your life, and sometimes just for a season in a cycle. But I've had many, and each of them has set me on my next step. The two that have been permanent in my life have been John Roger and Sai Baba, the two most important people that I have met in this incarnation, that are truly members of my spiritual family. My wonderful husband, John, passed away quite a few years back. He was another one. My wonderful co-partner and co-commander, Solario, she's another one. We've been together for over 20 years. So there are certain ones that are just really, really a part of your destiny. And when you meet them, you recognize them. They know you and you know them. And it began to walk in tandem for a period of time or maybe for a lifetime. So if we began to live and approach our life each day and set before ourselves the task of self-mastery, I think it makes our life much more interesting and definitely much more on purpose. You get up in the morning and you go, okay, let me start this day right before I leap out of bed. Let me just fold my palms and thank the Creator of all life for the blessing of awakening this day. And let me dedicate this day entirely to the service of God and humanity. And then call in the light, see yourself come into your body as a column of pure white Christ light. Fill yourself with the energy and power of the Holy Spirit. Get up and go forth to the glory of God. That's the way to start your day. You do that, you're going to have a great day. And you get in your car and turn on the ignition. You start to pray. You call on the light. You qualify your day. Don't just take potluck. You bring a portable paradise wherever you go. You're God's church. Your body is the church of God, church of Christ. You're the tabernacle. You're the temple. And you carry that sacredness in you and with you and around you. Whatever it is you do. I remember during that time I was with my first teacher. My little girl was trying to think how old she was. It's 4 years old. And I would always turn the ignition and go in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Our Father, which art in heaven, you know, I'd start the Lord's Prayer. One day I was in a hurry and I delayed. You know, I put the key in the ignition and I started the car, but I didn't go in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And she really quickly goes, "Hey, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Father," run away. She starts to say the Lord's Prayer really fast because I think she thought that the prayer was what started the car. Poor little baby. Oh, so many funny little things, the cute little things that happened. And beautiful things, too. I remember when we would drive home, we would often sing, you know, Rock of Ages or Near My God to Thee or How Great Thou Art. You know, certain songs that we knew, we would sing them at the top of our voice when I would be driving home from work and I'd pick her up from the babysitter. And this one particular day, we were singing at the top of our voice when from a side street, a car came barreling really, really fast and there was no way that I could brake or swerve or anything. He was on me before I even saw him. And if he had smashed into our car, it would have gone directly through the seat where my little daughter was buckled in and, you know, would have really, really, goodness knows what would have happened. But through God's grace, everything went into slow motion. The car, which later found was driven by a very drunk man, swerved and just nicked my taillights and missed us. My little girl said that she felt arms reach around her and hold her in the seat, and we were completely unharmed. I got out of the car to check on the other man. He was sitting there very, very dazed. and very drunk or drugged. I wasn't sure what. But he was fine, and his car was fine, and we just got off and went our way. So that's an example how when you live in God and in that consciousness of God and live your life in a sacred and conscious and responsible manner, bringing the light to bear when you drive, when you get up, when you go to bed, when you are in your place of employment, you call the light forward to fill, surround, and protect you, and to be present with you and to balance whatever needs to be balanced for the highest good. A simple prayer like that. You begin to live in the light and walk in the light, and you become sons of light in that way. And your whole life becomes set into a vibration that we call living in love, living love, and living in grace. You're lifted above the laws of karma and circumstance and accident, and you begin to flow in that higher upper consciousness that we call grace. And that is the supernatural ordering of your life according to a higher vibrational state of being and awareness. And that's where you're in the world and not of it. But it comes by a conscious decision that you're going to live for God every moment of the day. You're going to live for God. Everything is for God's glory. And it goes without saying, to live like that, you kind of have to know who God is. You've got to come to terms with something that is very experiential, but aside from seeing the God in each other, is invisible at this level. And so it's, again, it's developing your relationship from the heart, because only the heart can comprehend the things of God and the things of spirit. And I don't mean the emotional heart, but that core essence that we call the soul or the Atma, the divine spirit, the Holy Spirit. That part of you is the revelator that will reveal to you as you turn to it and petition to be illumined, to be illumined with truth. Those of you that know the Gayatri Mantra, that's another excellent mantra to pray, to chant correctly. You've got to chant it correctly. To illumine, to have that divine light illumine your understanding, illumine your mind, and bring you into the higher consciousness. When Jesus was asked by his apostles of all the commandments of God and the Ten Commandments, what do you say is the most important? And Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, all your soul, and your fellow man as yourself. But now it's interesting. If you don't know God, you don't know love, because God and love are one. If you don't know God, you don't know who you are. If you don't know who you are, you don't know that you are love. If you don't know who you are, you don't know that you are love, how can you love anyone else? It all starts with you loving yourself. But if you don't know who you are and you don't know anything beyond your physical appearance and body in this lifetime, that's pretty hard to love. You need something deeper to sink your love into. And once you realize that it is divine, it's God, him herself within you that is the love that you are, then of course you feel love for yourself. And when you love yourself, you also are capable of loving others and God. So it's kind of a round robin there. I think, as I have so often mentioned, that we need to get to the place where we just simply ask God to dwell consciously and fully in our heart, and that we come to know God through knowing his perfect image in this world, which is Jesus the Christ. The simplest thing in the world is to ask Jesus to dwell within our consciousness, within our heart, within our awareness, and to lead us into that oneness with the Father that he had attained, and to lead us into the revealing to ourselves the love that we are. We're made of the warp and woof of love. And love, of course, is the proof that a person knows God. If you do not have love, if you're not a person of love, you can never lay claim to knowing God. It's impossible. God and love are one and the same thing. The people of God are recognized only by their love. You can do all the rituals in the world. You can do all the yogic siddhis. You can pray gazillions of times a day. You can do all these rituals and things. But if you don't have love, you don't know God. You may know your rituals really well. You may know all of the mantras and stuff. But the telling sign of a knower of God is love. So when you can do everything in your life with an attitude of love, an attitude of graciousness and gracefulness and gratitude, you are filled with that divine spirit. And you become a blessing, whatever you do, masterful or not, if you do it with that heart of love and gratitude, that counts as perfection in the kingdom of God. Whatever you do with love is blessed to perfection. So the only wrong thing to do is to do something without the heart of love, without gratitude. If you do things in a, you know, it says in the Bible that whatsoever you put your hand to, do it with all your heart and all your mind as unto God. So when we do things for God, in God's name, that's our intention. This is like St. Teresa said, Mother Teresa. She said, make my life something beautiful for God. Let your life be something beautiful for God. And beauty is another thing, you know. Beauty and God are one and the same. You know, one of the names of God is Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Satyam is truth. Shivam is goodness. And Sundaram is beauty. So truth, goodness, and beauty are manifestations of God's own nature that radiate through you, that radiate through your words and your gaze and your touch and your speech, and your very presence becomes a sanctified state that you present into the environment, into the situation, into your homes, into your workplace. That's your real mission. There isn't any other mission but to reveal God's kingdom, God's presence, God's beauty, and the gracious beauty that the higher civilizations, without a single exception, all of the sacred divine planets — a sacred planet is a planet that has merged and been infused with its soul. Just like a person becomes a sacred person, a self-realized person, when they are fully descended as a soul into all the levels of their being, and their whole being is occupied by their spiritual consciousness, then they become a living temple of God, very consciously presenting into this world. Planets are the same. They also have a soul. They also must merge with that soul. One day our Earth will merge with Venus, her soul, and then she will become a sacred planet. Right now, she's not a sacred planet. She's a material girl operating out of the flesh or out of the carnal ego self. But she's destined, you see, to become soul-infused and to merge and move into the Venus orbit as Venus moves up to her next level. So right now, what we call the ascension is actually the Earth is beginning to vibrate and move into her astral body on the way of return. It's not a very high ascension. It's just moving a little bit higher than she has been, But for Earth, it's going to manifest in a very, very different state of being because of all the grace that's being exerted upon her. And because she is the first, absolutely first, non-sacred planet to produce a Christ. So that is very rare. And now through that great incarnation of the Christ, we have a collective Christ, the collective Messiah, and all of those souls that are moving into Christ consciousness. So that makes birth very, very unique. So the fact is there are no wasted moments and no moments to waste. And we can make every second count towards the mastering of her levels of expression, bringing each of them, each day, every thought, every word, every deed, into more and more beauty as befitting the divine incarnations that we are. And as we focus on taking care of the tiniest details of our life with increasing precision and focus of excellence, how we find that more and more things are done with beauty and through grace and ease. And that, you see, beloved, adds up to a life that's lived more and more consciously. And just a sense of impeccability, just the whole concept of self-mastery and impeccability fires the inspiration and ardor of a truly flaming spirit. You know, when we hear that call, it sets us ablaze because we know in our heart of hearts that we're designed for something great. You know, none of us that are at all developed spiritually want to lead a life that doesn't bring out our fullest potential. We all want to shine in our fullest potential and to manifest and give forth the gifts that we know that God has placed within us. So to do this requires the infusion of soul awareness into your mind, into your emotions, into your everyday behavior and modus operandi. And it's not like you become a perfectionist. That's not the objective. We don't want to take a rigid positioning, but what we want to do is learn to dance in the light. So dance. Dance, beloveds. Take nothing personal at all. Take nothing personally. You know, it's not about you, but it's about that divine you, a divine Son of God that dwells within you. And, you know, you don't define yourself in your ego's sense of self as better or holier or more perfect than anyone else. It's to honor and reveal and express the beauty of the Creator in and through all that you do. So give a little mosey over your life this coming week, if you like, and see how your life measures up in terms of what we have been discussing tonight. Your daily habits, your words, your lifestyle, do they glorify God? Do they reveal that divinity to others? Do they inspire the divine in others? And are you truly representing on Earth assignment these higher divine worlds and dimensions from whence we've come? We are ambassadors of a whole new way of life, whole new way of life that is of the divine through the flesh, through the presentation of the physical life. That is the way of the higher worlds. And that is what we've come to exemplify, to teach, to model, to communicate, and to use to inspire and encourage the beloved humans that we share this planet with. So, very dispassionately, without judgment or criticism, just see where your life could use an upgrade and a little tweaking. And know that exciting times are upon us. The Avatar Sai Baba has said that on December 21st, 2012, at exactly 3:33, the DNA of all humankind will be transformed. Wow. So, that's all he said about that. But we can assume that it is part of our transcending and ascending through divine intervention and assistance into what he has termed the Golden Age. So, I am very, very excited about it. I love to talk about these things, and I hope it gives you also some fire in your belly and in your heart and in your spirit to bring yourself forward, regardless of what life presents. Bring yourself forward and push the envelope into greater and greater divine expression. So again, we come to the end of our show for tonight. Let's go out chanting. Let's do Sananda, L-U. I'm going to sing it, okay? Sananda, L-U. 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 Gives you a nice little bhajan. You can sing if you like. And God willing, I will be with you again next week. Adonai.